Okay, we're going to be learning throughout the year, whether it's in this particular Mizgeret of Tuesday night Machshava or moving into what normally traditionally is during the Musar Seder at night. And we're going to be moving into a Sefer called the Chovas HaTamid. Again, we're doing this right now during our Ifakta slot. We're still hoping davening the Yishtavei Refuah Shleimah Bekarov, because I feel bad saying that you don't know what you're missing, but you're really missing a lot by not having Ifax here right now. So I'm not really a replacement, but hopefully the Rebbe Sefer is going to do a good job of speaking for itself, even if I'm an improper mouthpiece. So a little bit of an introduction to what we're learning, and this is not just time filler, but there are sheets coming in that you guys will have, a Sefer in front of you. But either way, at the beginning of this series of Shurim, I always spend a little while talking about the Sefer, because I think the background is something that's a little, a bit helpful and also important. So the Chovas HaTamidim was I will call it the life work in terms of a Sefer of a very, very special Rebbe called the Pia Zetzner Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, and Hashem Yikom Damo. You probably heard little bits and tidbits about, but we'll give you a little bit more just to put things in place and give you a perspective and understanding. So the Pia Zetzner Rebbe came from a long line of the most heavy hitters of all of the Chassidish Rebbes that were out there throughout the history of Polish Chassidus, at least, or the other places in Ukraine, Russia, other areas. But in Poland, he was from the royal family. Thank you very much. From the royal family of Rebbes that were there, stemming out. Pesach, just a minute. Hang on to those things. Everything in due time. So descending from some of the big names, if you're familiar with them, the Chozem Lublin, the Rebbe Melech of Lizhensk, and the Kozhetzer Magid, and a number of others that were there. And at a relatively young age, in his 20s, had assumed the both position of the Rebbe and the Rav of a small town called, and that's a small city, in Polish scales, called a small city. He called the Piasetza, which is right outside, not so far outside of Warsaw, in between Warsaw and Gier, if you've ever heard of those names before. Now, the Piasetza Rebbe himself was killed in 1934 on Dalek Cheshvan, as we mentioned on Shabbos. And I'm going to jump to the end of his life, which many people are more familiar with, even though I think he would have very clearly told you that was not what he wanted to be remembered by. Pia Zetzner Rebbe, at the end of his life, when he was in the Warsaw Ghetto, had taken upon himself, as did many other leaders and rebbes at the time. There were a lot of people that were consolidated into a very small area, and there were many, many great leaders of Jewry that were there in the Warsaw Ghetto. Menachem Zemba, one of the great Gedolim, that two previous Lubavitcher Rebbes ago, what they call, the Chabad people still call the Friedrich Rebbe, which is, again, right now, two people ago. The Briskarov was there in Warsaw, the Ger Rebbes were there in Warsaw, a lot of people were there at various times in the short couple of years of the Warsaw Ghetto. The Piasetzer Rebbe was one of those that took upon himself to try to lead a group that would still be dedicated to Avodas Hashem, going through all the hardships that they were going through during ghetto life in the Holocaust, but to try to keep a focus and an inspiration and emunah and bitachon and a kadosh baruch Hu throughout all the things that were going on. Again, he certainly wasn't alone in that at all, but definitely was someone who was known as someone who was filled with inspiration and able to touch people in a very, very profound, kind of a way. What made that period famous was a series of writings that he had wrote for himself, different notes that of the shiurim, I guess we'll call it, the talks that he gave at different secret tishin and shalshudas things that he had during the years in the Warsaw Ghetto. Obviously, these things were illegal; they had to be done in secrecy. He had buried them in a small little milk container. And wrote a letter on the top of this package of all the writings that if anyone ever finds this, again, they had no idea what was going to happen in the world, but if anyone ever digs up this thing and notices this, he wrote this in, this part in Polish, if someone could send it to the following person. He had a brother, Yishai LeShapiro, who had moved to Eretz Yisrael right before World War II, and he was his own story in himself, a very, very fascinating person. And the Piazetzer Rebbe wrote, if anyone finds this, please send this to Shai LeShapiro in Tel Aviv, Palestine. You know, his brother at that time lived in Tel Aviv, which then was a city filled with many, many Gedolei Yisrael and Rebbes and all of that. It changed over time, but then Tel Aviv was a bustling place of Torah and Yerushalayim, amongst a lot of other things too. But Torah Yerushalayim definitely had a role in Tel Aviv then. And eventually these writings were found and they got published in the form of a book known as the Eish Kodesh, a name you probably have heard of before. And in that way, the Piazetzner Rebbe became like a model of spiritual Holocaust resistance and Emunah Bitachon, etc. Now, he would have told you, and I'm basing this on you know, family, I mean, I just listened and learned for about 7 years, a little bit more than that, with... There's only, you know, surviving, well, actually only, but one of the current Piazetzner Rebbe and one of his descendants, or family member, I should say. So the Chovas HaTzamidim himself would have wanted to be remembered, which is the way he always asked to be remembered in his lifetime, as a mechanic, as someone who educated people, as someone who inspired people to grow in their learning, in Yerushalayim, in Dveikus with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. He lived at a time before the Holocaust. He lived at a time that was a very dark time for Polish Jewry. And let's explain a little bit what had been happening, because again, some of the points are, I think, are very, very important. In between the years of World War I and World War II, okay, even though this started happening a little bit before World War I, things started to change in the glory days of Eastern European Jewry. There used to be countries like Poland and Lithuania that were these, you know, incredibly strong places of Limud HaTorah, of Yerushalayim, and like that. Poland was basically exclusively Hasidish. Litva, on the other hand, was exclusively Litvish. That's what they called it, Litvish. That was once somewhere in Lithuania with a group of Talmidim, and after a couple of days, some guy had one of these moments where, like, the light bulb turns on in his mind and says, "Hey, I just figured this out. They're called Litvish because they're from Lithuania, like from Lita. Hey, how about that, right? You got that, okay?" So in Lita, they were not Hasidish. In Poland, they were, but in Poland, a bit more than Lita, the winds, we'll call it, of a lot of non-Jewish and outside influences started to sweep, you know, seep in. Many people had started to challenge their beliefs and what they stood for. Yiddishkeit started to falter quite a bit, and then many people were quickly going, as we call, you know, today, going off the derech and stopping the levels of frumkeit that they had. And you had these very, very absurd and sad situations where parents, you know, would have been, let's say, spadik wearing, you know, wonderfully warm and beautiful Hasidic Yidden having a Friday night suda, and their kids would have been, like, you know, sitting on the equivalent of, you know, their computer at the table or on their phone or whatever, and just, like, totally rejecting and spitting in parents' faces. And it was a very, very rough time. There was one person who, again, I should say one, but it sounds more dramatic. There was one person who stood up and said, "Listen, we really have to change this around a lot." And he did it in a very, very daring way, which was to challenge the establishment, which is something that people don't usually like to do. And he wrote in this sefer, in the introduction, which we're not going to read, a very, very powerful line where he said, and I'm saying this now just so we can, this is like segueing into what we're going to be learning now. He said as follows. He said, the Torah is something that is intrinsically beautiful and wonderful and enticing and attractive and like that. That's what Divrei Torah. There's nothing more sweet than the Emes and so on and so forth. But if the kids today are having a problem with that, are not attaching themselves to both to learning and to Avodas Hashem. So we said, instead of what everyone else in the world is doing, is saying, "Oh, kids today and like the youth today, everyone's like they're going, oh, you know, off the rockers and they're going wild and this and that, and like these kids are all these kinds of expressions." Said the Piazetzer Rebbe, the Emes is probably the fault of the Mechanchim and the Rabbanim, and not of the kids. The kids are, you know, doing kid stuff, what all normal kids do. But if the Rebbeim can't present the Torah and Yiddishkeit and what it means to grow as a Ben Torah in a way that's attractive to somebody, so then there's something wrong with that. because the product itself is very, very good. Obviously, the kids are going to want that, but like, we got to figure out how to address the populace, how to reach out to people in a way that's going to be more meaningful to them. And he took it upon himself to really work on that in that area. And he founded a yeshiva called Das Moshe, named after his father-in-law. And the different reports will tell you how successful it was. I met people that learned there. That, but it definitely was a powerful institution. And the crown jewel of what the Piazetzner Rebbe did was write this sefer, the Chovos HaTalmidim, where he describes a whole mahalach, a whole approach to Yiddishkeit, a whole approach to growth, and how a person can attach themselves to a Kaddish Baruch Hu in a very, very meaningful way, and really start to think through his life about what it's all about. And what he would want to be doing with himself. And it became even at that time, a very, very, very powerful and effective sefer. Now, in the introduction, he has over here, if you have the sefer, again, like we're not reading this inside, but the introduction part is called the Siach Im HaMelamdim V'Avos Sabanim, a discussion with teachers and parents. And this is Kedai, I'm pointing this out to you because at some stage in your life, you really do want to read this. It's a very, very long, small print, on and 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 on, a lot of pages here, I'm not even counting, but a lot of pages, that just talk about approaches to chinuch, how a person can most appropriately and effectively reach out to their kids, reach out to their talmidim, and it's very worthwhile to read when you get in a position where you yourselves are going to become mechanchim, and all the methods and ideas and things that the Rebbe writes about in there were compacted into this sefer, the Chovos HaTalmidim. In other words, without necessarily talking about all the points that he makes in the sefer itself, is based on a lot of the shitas that he had about how to address teenagers in particular, and try to inspire and touch them a little bit more. And that's why this sefer has become at least to me such an incredibly important one. And I do have to tell you that over the years, I think it's definitely been decades already, having this list to learn the sefer with groups of talmidim and friends, has definitely been a very, very positive experience, for everybody. And I, Be'ezer Hashem, with the Kaddish Baruch Hu's help, we'll have a similar experience over here this year as well. So that's what things are all about. Again, I'm going to make comments about the style and the writing and all that as we're reading. But for right now, if Yehuda doesn't mind grabbing the sheets and starting to pass us that again, there's two pages you want to be getting. In other words, I gave you out the whole first parak over here, so each guy gets two. I think it's numbered as pages 1 through 4. So just take two and pass them on. Smooth. There you go. Not a bad idea, by the way. I'm going to make an assumption that you're going to buy one over here, so these sheets are not always going to be coming out, but certainly until you get a chance to pick one up, you definitely want... You definitely want to do that. Nowadays they have like the nicer one. The Rebbe today reprinted them and with the vowels and all that stuff, so you can read it a little bit easier. I still got one of the old ones, huh? And it's in English. Yeah, it's in English also. The
you start from the beginning and go through.
What was that?
The plan is to start from the beginning and go through.
Yeah, I was thinking about doing it backwards, but then I guess the sentences weren't going to flow as well.
No, as opposed to like starting in the middle or somewhere.
Yeah, just checking, yeah. Never get straight answers. Okay, yeah. Paragraph, we're on? Okay. Okay, so Perek Aleph starts off. The title is called a Kriya El HaTalmud, a call, invitation, a call to the Talmud. And that would be us around this the table. So the Ashrecha Ner Yisrael. Okay, let me point that also before we start. The Rebbe was a very, very poetic person. He thought and functioned in a world that we don't all. That we don't want to do. If you want to read a little bit more, the Eish Kodesh is interesting. Again, when the Emes is, it's not always so easy to read. were understandable. But there are other svarim that the Rebbe wrote also. That there's a sefer called the Tzav Zeros in the back of the sequel to the Chovas HaDivin called the Hachshar Savreichim, which is a diary that he wrote about different thoughts and ideas. And you see very, very pretty things that he would write. So the sefer begins like that also. Ashrecha, now, but you're going to get a feel within a couple of minutes of what's happening over here. Ashrecha nar Yisrael v'ashrei chalkecha. Fortunate and happy are you, nar Yisrael, means a teenager, v'ashrei chalkecha, and fortunate and happy is your lot in life. It's the Torah Or Hashem Lil Mod Zachisa, you were zochet to learn the Torah, the Or Hashem, the light of Hashem. V'liyos ben Shashua ben Ruchuma v'alisa, you rose up to be a cherished play child, plaything, or playmate of a Kaddish Baruch. It's a nice thing. Malachi Elyon Yekanucha af Yekerucha, the Malachim and Shemayim are jealous of you, they honor you. Sarif Rekel Alecha Yismu v'osucho Yechabdu, the Seraphim and names of different angels are amazed by you, and they're mechabe, they honor you. Hashemayim utzvam ha'aretz malo alecha yismuchu v'lefanecha yikanu, the Shemayim and all the hosts, everything that's filled in the world, are all happy with you, and mamish bow in front of you. Ze el ze sholem, they ask each other, mi hu anar asher amudi yesh kodesh mipiv mizbarim, who's this kid? That pillars of holy fire coming out of his mouth. Adon Olam Imram El Karam Ifnei Hamon Tzvav Ruvos Kedoshim Bo Misbar V'Ito Sameach. And who's this person that the master of all the worlds, higher than everything else, in front of all of his assembly, is going to be proud and happy with that guy sitting in that base medrash? Who is that person? Meaning the opening paragraph just gives a little quick comment about, which we don't necessarily think about all these things, but how lucky and fortunate you are for being who you are and where you are and doing what it is that you're doing. The Hashem Sameach Becha. Hashem is happy with you. You're in a yeshiva, you're learning. Hashem is very, very happy about that. V'gam ata nar Yisrael togil v'sismach v'godol ashrecha v'rabas hatzlachas chazu. And you, nar Yisrael, you should be happy and rejoicing about the incredible fortune that you have and the great luck that you have. Who could be amongst those who have the schus to see the king all the time, to be able to come in and out of the king's room and not be rejoicing and happy about it? And who could be that person that Hashem himself could whisper in his ear Es matzpun of all of his secrets? V'yilamdu lo es torasa, and Hashem is teaching you his Torah. V'lo yachshav lo kalas rosh v'avanam lo yismach. And how could it not be considered a little bit too lightheaded, or maybe even a sin, if we wouldn't be happy about having that about that schus? So I'm going to keep reading before we talk. Aval yadanu gam yadanu, but I know. He always speaks of we, but it means but I know. Shelu yadata benafshecha, she'es haTorah b'leiv u'moach torm atalomit. If you knew in your heart and soul, and you were learning Torah with a pure heart and a pure mind, and if I know that if you felt inside yourself the closeness to Hashem, who's sitting there at your table, at your standard, learning right there with you when you're sitting involved in learning, if you felt that inside, all of your requests, if you understood and knew that all of your requests about your life, your parents, their parnasa, anything you ask for, lifnei Hashem ashelafenecha kiben lifnei av atem eschan, if you felt that you could talk to Hashem like a child does to a parent, v'hu yizbarach ka'aves ben ahuva l'cha ona omeratze, and if you knew that Hashem is going to respond to you like the parent does to their beloved son, as kulcha nisragashta you'd be incredibly, all of your body, your kulucha, would be overcome by emotion, joy, simcha, and all of that. Of those things that I just mentioned, you were aware of. Aval, but, straight to the point, kaven just called leila bekir b'cha eina tamargish. But since that whole list of things you don't feel inside of you, v'rak kinar bein hana'arim es atzmocha atamakir, you recognize and look at yourself as a kid amongst other kids. I'm a guy like everybody else, just another guy. V'nachein lo tefarchiz nafshecha, your nefesh is not moving and shaking inside you. Lo teida l'smach v'simchascha, you also don't know and don't understand to be happy about that which you have to be happy about. But lo odu, not only that, and this is like a little bit too understatement over here. Sometimes it even happens because of that you don't feel all those things. Sometimes the desire, the ratzon, to learn Hashem's Torah might be a little bit missing from you. And sometimes you might not totally listen to what Hashem has to say because you don't feel all those things that we just mentioned. Imagine for a minute. I think it's so important to understand. I'll tell the Derech A story. Years ago, there was a boy who had been in my shir, and as time went on, months into yeshiva, so. The boy kept on, what do you call it, realizing, and we kept on speaking about the idea that the truth is he wasn't really so, how do we phrase it in a nice way, wasn't so up on his like emunah, bitachon, belief in like that he really like should be like Jewish and what's it all about and Torah Misinai and a lot of things or whatever. We always spoke about it. Right? One time I recommended to him, maybe it's not a bad idea, take a day or two, whatever it was, go to a Kiro program, Yeshatoru Yerushalayim, something and go to more of an intensive thing to what he called, to address, in particular some of the things that are bothering you. And then come back and we'll learn, after that. So that's what he did. He came back to yeshiva sometime within the week and like that. And I remember probably about a week after that, I kept on watching this guy who was like just very, always looked upset and always looked angry and was like, wasn't doing so well. So I after like observing this for a little bit, so I said, hey, like what's the, leave his name out for now, but what's the, what's the deal? Like you look a little upset. And so very, very cute. He said to me, I seemed to be serious at the time also, he said, Rebbe, I hate you and I'm miserable. And, okay, great, okay. And I'm like, what's wrong now? So he said, I went to this thing and they like totally convinced me of like, there's a God in this world and Torah Misinai and like you have to keep like the Torah. And I really like, I totally believe it. Like it's like obvious and I got to do that. But I still hate it. I still don't like it. I just got to do it. And I'm like, I'm stuck with this. Before I went, I just like did whatever I wanted and everything was like chilled out. And now like I'm like stuck living like I'm like miserable. And what am I doing now? It's all your fault. So the truth is, okay, it was a very, very, very good point. It was a very good point. And the first thing that the Rebbe points out over here that we want to remember is, I think it's fair to say for most people, I don't think that's overly accusatory, for most people out there, especially when we're kids, and that's where the Sefer was meant to be read, Dafka, at the age that we're at right now, especially when we're teenagers, a lot of times, if not like all the time, we're faced with a conflict of things that excite us. What turns us on? What do we get caught up in? What do we get into like that in life? And for a lot of people out there, maybe not for you, but for a lot of people out there, Torah and mitzvahs and their world of ruchnius is not always the thing that like totally gets them, totally gets them working. Again, anyone who could ever be seen, and I think this is fair to say, I apologize, this is offensive, but I think it's totally fair, anyone who could ever be seen, like, watching intently, like, the video they're watching on their iPod, or just, like, closing their eyes, like, and really listening to, like, the song that they're, I remember once sitting on a subway story, I remember once sitting on a subway, in a summer in hand, and the lady was taking the one seat next to me, I guess fair, only one seat, and like that, so she put on, she happened to not have been from the Caucasian part of the human race, and so like, sat down in the thing, and I really can't possibly like ever do justice to like the whole picture over here, but put like the earphones on, and like very like quickly afterwards, again, it's like kind of really bad, but like all of a sudden you started like the warm-up was like taking place, and you're watching like this, and like, and then all of a sudden like the legs are going like in the whole like whatever, boom, and like totally like oblivious to the fact that like this is weird, like you're on a sub, like in the middle, like we're all over the place, and like very talented, like but whatever, but sitting like in the and so like what happens, like someone, you got caught up by something, right? If you talk to somebody who's in the middle of like a movie they're enjoying or like doing something online that they're into, and you get like the brain dead, like not on this planet response. Hello, like what? And I'm trying to ask you something that's important. You know, the house is burning down. You're saying that. Like, what's one minute? Hold on a second. You know, I'm still in the middle of something. We all have had moments where we were in the middle of something that caught our attention, that got us excited, that turned us on, overcame us. And yet the Rebbe writes over here that this is one of the things he speaks about in the introduction. And this is, you'll hear more about this coming up soon, probably even tonight, that the Rebbe has a shita, that every single person in this world has a basic human need for excitement, for enjoyment. That's something that you can't avoid, that's something that can't be suppressed. That's just the way it is. Every single person has them. The only shaila that we're going to be faced with is how do we address that? And there are some things that are easy to get like excitement from in the world that we live in, and other things that it might not be as easy to get that excitement from. But the challenge is going to be to make sure that we're keeping ourselves as excited as we need it to be. And again, that's the important part of it, as we need it to be, as we're going to be no matter what. Now, wouldn't it be amazing if that excitement was going to come from our world of learning and ruchness? Can you imagine, right? This might sound like even scary to say at this stage. Can you imagine, you know what I'm talking about, like the video face, like the online face, like when you're just like, you know what I mean? Yeah, you know what a food face is? Yeah, did you ever like watch a guy, like let's say there's like the food thing sitting over there, or there's like trays of food on the table. And when like, watch this tonight, like, everyone's going to go nuts like over here tonight. But like when you got your eye on like a piece of food on the tray, like you're looking at it and like you want to get that one over there, like there. So like you get like very engrossed in stuff. But imagine like transferring either the food face or the video face, the music like experience, into a blood gemara you were learning, into a tefillah that you were davening, where when someone like came over to you and you were learning, and your reaction was you didn't even hear them because you were caught up in what it was that you were doing, and like the rest of the world around you is just not there. That's possible. It's doable. Okay, and even he's going to talk about even happened to us at this stage. But as he says, the starting point though is what he writes over here. How many of us actually like really walk around feeling that sense of excitement? Is that something we have inside of us? Where I say every time I open up a Gemara, I all of a sudden feel, much like I like to use all the time, that the color coming back into my otherwise black and white life. I think that's a nice quote. Right, you open up a Gemara and boom, all of a sudden like my life is back in color. I'm at home, I'm at ease, I'm excited with them. Do we really feel that? When we're in the middle of davening, do we feel this intense spiritual pleasure and like this real communion with the Kaddish Baruch, with this real interface with the Ribbono Shel in a way that I actually feel like I'm talking to somebody? So as he points out, I know, and this is all true, it's not like you don't have to be like a nubby to know this, but like I know that that's not the way most people feel when they're 17, 18, 19, 20 years old until they actually deal with that. And so he says like this, Al Zeb Bano Eilech, and that's why I'm here. Ben Yakir, my beloved, precious son. Zos Rotzim Ano Lasos Mimcha. What we want to do and to make out of you and to help you develop into through the course of this Sefer is the following things. And this is going to be a mission statement. In other words, we're going to give a list over here of four things that the goal of the Sefer is we should be able to walk away, put the things into practice, and come out with the following. Number one, very interesting list. Number one, Chein Hashchina Apanecha Yair. Number one, sounds like a high goal, that the beauty of the Shechina should shine from your face. Right? Not just because you're like me, like an incredibly greasy and oily, whatever, the Shechina should shine from, you know, if you ever go to the Molim of Aser, there's a pharmacy there. So there was one time where like we needed some like medicine for one of my kids. It was like a little something a little bit rushed, and I remember like I'm not always the most responsible people in the world, and so I probably knew about going to the pharmacy to get medicine earlier in the course of that day or week, but I didn't do it. And like, I very clearly told my wife in a way that like wives are very good at giving instructions sometimes. The thing closed at 9 o'clock, and it's like 8 minutes to 9 right now. And if you don't get yourself to like move aside to that pharmacy, like you're dead. And so like, okay, and like, you know, driving fast is not overly difficult for me. And so like, if I took one of my kids and said, you know what, I'm gonna not stop the car, you go run. And And what do you call it? You know, but before he parked the car, I said, boom, never said no problem. You know, parked the car, and I went dashing in, like, you know, whatever it is to with the money probably, whatever. I wanted just them to get inside before they actually closed. So I'm making, like, the beeline, running as fast as I can into that door, and I see the lights are on, everything's good, the door is wide open, and I go straight into the thing, only to fly back, boom, smash, whatever it is. My glasses go flying, all twisted on my face. Glass door, very clean. And I just didn't know. I just didn't see it was a glass door. There's no shine. Smack into the thing. Then, and very nicely, the lady at the glasses store next door says to me, "Would you like me to fix your glasses for you?" And yeah, I think so. Okay, let's get this back in shape. And let's get back to the point of the story. But imprinted on that otherwise clean glass door of the whatever pharmacy in Mivaseret was my nose and like my forehead, and you just like saw this like picture of like Moshe Gordon's face like on that thing. I affect everything that I touch and everything that I go near. And like that. So you can shine for my reasons, but you can also shine because a person becomes a person of Kedusha. Chein Hashchina Al Panecha Yoya. Number one is that your face should shine from the beauty of the Shechina that's coming out of you. Number two, Mocha Chalibacha B'chalei V'erecha the Torah U'v'yavodas Hashem Yiftecha. We like that your mind, your heart, and all of your limbs, your entire body, should be opened up towards Avodas Hashem. In other words, in your mind intellectually, in your heart emotionally, and even as second nature, my entire like physical being should be open and like predisposed, so to speak, to Torah and Avodas Hashem. Like that's what I like want, and that's who I am. Number three, Libacha v'nafshecha v'kirves Elokim esher yadecha yargishu. We want that your heart and soul should actually feel the closeness of Hashem that's there with you all the time. Not just like, oh God, yeah, like I know about him, but like you should walk around having a feeling all the time, knowing, feeling experientially and emotionally that Hashem is always along with you. Number four, es kol bakashosecha lefanov yizbarach kelifnei av ohev tishbuch. You should pour out all of your requests to Hashem like you were to your beloved parent. V'hu ka'av leben ohev lanoscha v'datos chayachesh. And the result of that, of course, is that Hashem will respond to you like he does to his beloved child. Four things that are there. And that sounds like a very, very tall order, right? The idea of like Shechina shining from my face, my entire being should be opened to and predisposed to want to do Avodas Hashem. I should wake up in the morning, have this feeling of, hey, let me be the first one to minyan this morning, and like go running and like that, down to the base matters to go and dab. And the idea that a person throughout the course of his day and life should be able to actually feel that a Kadosh Baruch was there with him at all times, involved in his life, that he actually has like almost a personal interaction, a personal relationship, a back and forth with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And of course, number four, which is to some degree is a result of the other things, that a person's tefillos should actually become things that are very, very meaningful for him and long-lasting. Now you'll notice that he didn't speak about the idea, we want you to become the biggest Talmud Chacham in the world and the greatest Lamdan in the world. He's going to speak about that as we go on. Those things are the most important and the most meaning vehicle to achieve some of these other things that are there. But that's going to come soon. I'm going to do a little bit more over here before we break. Ben Yakir, my beloved child. Efshar tefached leimu, and it's possible that you might be a little scared. And one of the things that the Rebbe does in this sefer is always speaks in like first person, like he speaks to you. And a lot of times, like he like says things that are a little bit spooky because he never met you. He was alive like a long time ago, but somehow or another, he had, like, a very good knack of like reading your mind, even though he never met you. And like, and you go, hey, I actually was about to say that. Ben Yakir, efshar tefached leimu. You might be a little nervous, a little scared, and say, I'm just like a teenager. I'm soft and good. I'm a nice little guy. Oiv the shovev ma'at. I like to fool around. Oiv the sachik im anarim. I like to just play with my friends, do my stuff. When I have 10 minutes of free time, I like to be out on the chutzah throwing a basketball around. I like to do stuff, whatever it is. And hine bonu eilecha la'soscha b'pam achas li'ish zakein yoshev v'dome. And in one shot, this guy wants to come and make you into some old man sitting around doing nothing, boring. L'rachik mimcha is kol yadusha, and to distance your entire youth and childhood from you. Oh, day lecha b'chozeh. I got plenty of time for that. Let me get out of college, get out whatever it is. 6-year base matters, who knows what. But like now, like, you know, I'm 18 years old. I want to live I live my life. One Baal Tshuva once told me that he said, you know, I feel like a little dumb and horrible. I have all these friends who went through college and grad school, they had a great time and partied up and whatever it was, and they became frum when they got out of college. I did it in high school, and oh my gosh, I lost out of everything. Why did I do that? What was I thinking? So that idea, he says, is a thought that people have, like all this stuff, the Shechina, God, and whatever, is like, give me a break, like, you know, a little bit. About Te'isa Gam Te'isa, but you're making a big mistake. A very, very big mistake. Now, you might think that the next line is going to be making a big mistake because it's like really, really important. You really got to do all this and like, you know, you're going to die and burn in hell if you don't and all that kind of stuff. But that's not what he writes. He says like this, Nar kishnosecha tishoyer. You're going to remain a teenager exactly the years old that you are right now. Im chavirecha, chavirim tovichim be'erkocha tishaber aftisachik. You'll be able to get together with and fool around and hang out with your friends that are like you. Im koze, but along with that, la matara shirhe manu l'chamerosh tegi. You can still reach the goal that we set out for you at the beginning. Now, I'm going to just read quickly the rest of the pack. Im rak teida eich l'sachik v'eich l'shov. If you know and understand how to fool around, how to hang out. Im rak tamen v'teida shashem yizbarach malchusa v'kol mashal. If you know and believe inside that Hashem's malchus, I don't know how to translate this easily in English, but is exists over everything. When you understand a little bit more as you go on, that Hashem is there with you, all, even when you're out on the court or fooling around or doing whatever it is in town and the next place. This is a very, very powerful idea. The same exact way that every single person, no matter who you are, is by definition forced, needs, has an absolute need to take care of his bodily needs. He needs to eat, he needs to drink. There's no way a person at any stage in his life cannot do those things. Why? Because Hashem made you as a person, as a human being. We're physical people, have physical needs. That's the way we are, and that's the way we always will be. It's exactly the same thing. When you're a teenager, it's going to be difficult, if not impossible, to hold back from fooling around and hanging out and doing all your stuff because you are a kid, you still are a teenager. And exactly the same way, the Torah never expects an adult to say, well, I really want to get into my Yiddishkeit, so therefore I'm going to take a break the next month and there's no more food, no more drink. I'm just going to, whatever it is, live off in some cave, like contemplating and learning like that. That just doesn't work like that. You got to eat, you got to drink, you got to shower, there are bathrooms, all stuff that you do in life. That's the way it is. Well, for a teenager, it's exactly the same thing. Teenagers need it too. Fool around, hang out, have a good time, do all that stuff. And that's a need and an absolute thing that can't be given up on. But at the same time, a person is going to learn how to incorporate, both when he's eating or fooling around. Yes, there's a God in the world. Yes, he's running and watching out, and so on and so forth. But that doesn't mean just because we have those things, and this is what he's going to keep speaking about throughout the Sefer, that we're giving up on youth, on teenagerism, on childhood, on fun and excitement. All those things are going to exist. But at the same time, a person is going to be able to elevate himself to a level where he has those end goals that we mentioned before in mind and be able to reach those things in a very real way. So that's it for now. Be'ezer Hashem, next week we will continue.